The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arfcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begin.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arfcom starts now.
That's right, Radio Free Arfcom starts right now. April 19th, 2010, it is Patriots Day. Happy Patriots Day to all my fellow Arfcommers out there. For those that don't know, this day in history, in 1775, the battles of Lexington and Concord were fought to spark the American Revolution. So it's a great day. We have a great show for you. It's one I have been waiting for a couple of months now. It's been in the works, and we finally got everything together. We've got, as usual, our NRA board member Joe DeBurgola is going to be on right at the beginning. He's going to talk about the Second Amendment March today and a couple other news stories. We've got Goat Boy on, first of a two-part interview with Goat Boy about different site improvements that are coming at AR15.com. You're going to want to hear that. We get to know a site staff member this week, Bama Shooter. And then after that, it's the biggie. We have Ryan Smith from Remington and Drake from Magpul. They're going to be on to talk about ACR and give away all kinds of free stuff. I mean, these guys ponied up some serious, serious stuff, including a Bushmaster rifle. You heard me right. We're going to be giving away a Bushmaster rifle. We won't give it away on the show, but I'll tell you how to enter so that you can get the Bushmaster rifle. So stay tuned for that. We've got a great show for you. We're going to kick it off like we always do. Joe DeBurgola, how are you today, Joe?
Good, John. How are you?
I am doing outstanding today. It's Patriots Day. Happy Patriots Day to you.
And to you as well, and to our listeners.
Now, on marking Patriots Day, we had the Second Amendment rally in Washington, D.C. today. Is that right?
We did. We had actually two rallies, one in D.C. itself, D.C. proper, and one in the state of Virginia, just outside the city limits.
And what do your contacts say? Did we have a decent turnout? Were people able to get their point across?
Well, anytime you get more than one patriot together, you're going to have a very good outcome. I think both the messages from both rallies were well heard. I think everybody did a fine job expressing themselves. And I think our cause, which is a united cause, no matter what organization you belong to, I think it was well heard by the people in Washington. And as like I said, whenever you get more than one ARFCOMer or NRA member, GOA member, or BCDL member or whatever's out there coming together, everybody believes in freedom. And I think that's what it was expressed today.
Yeah, outstanding. That's just fantastic. We got all these different organizations to kind of come together a little bit and step up for our Second Amendment rights and let Congress know, at least Congress know. I know the administration's going to ignore us or, quote, be amused by us, but at least let them know that, hey, we're here to stick up for our rights. We believe in our rights. They are important to us.
They certainly are, and public discourse, rightly done, and politely, sometimes engaging, and to express ourselves is something that's guaranteed to us under the Constitution. So it's always good, like I said, to get together, get our point across, and then become engaged in the process as we move towards November. That's when it really makes a difference.
Despite what Bill Clinton says.
Yes, sir.
Now, He had to open his mouth this week. He just had to. It just makes my neck hurt every time he opens his mouth. Let's talk a little bit about our show next week, Joe. You and I have been working, you especially, been working really hard to put together this show for the SEALs that are facing charges, courts-martial charges, I believe they're going to face, for basically just doing their job. Let's talk a little bit about what we have coming up next week.
Sure. We got a great show. We're basically dedicating the entire show to the plight of the SEAL trio. The three petty officers from SEAL Team 10, Jonathan Keith, Julio Hortas, and Matthew McCabe, are the ones that have been accused for doing their job in the course of their assignments in SEALs to take down the terrorist, Ayman Hassim Abed. And he was the one, just to remind our listeners out there, that was the mastermind behind the virtual ambush of the four contractors from Blackwater. There was a Navy SEAL among them that was contracted by Blackwater, but four contractors that were ambushed, and then the remains were defiled by hanging them from what turned out to be Blackwater Bridge. That was they memorialized that, the bridge heading into Fallujah. And everybody remembers those vivid pictures and videos of our contractors, our American citizens, hanging from them while
absolutely.
The citizens of that country were celebrating. Very
yeah,
poignant, very memorable.
Sickening images.
And sickening. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So, yeah, we're going to have some great guests on. We're going to have one of the attorneys for one of these SEALs. I believe it's going to be Mr. Puckett, the attorney from the law firm Puckett and Farage, is going to be on. We're going to have Scott Taylor. He's a 2nd District Congress candidate for Virginia's 2nd District. We're going to have Chris Carter from the Victory Institute. Hopefully we can get David Bellavia back on. You're working on a couple more surprise guests for us, is that right?
I am. We have some. We have Larry Bailey, the Fuckett Larry.
Oh, that's right, Larry Bailey.
Who's a retired SEAL. He's heading up the FreeTheSeals.com website. He's also a contributor to Soldier of Fortune magazine. He's a great guest. And we have Justin from Pipeheaders Union. Some of the folks out there know their apparel, and he has support wear where our listeners can actually buy, and a portion of the money that they charge goes towards the Warrior Defense Fund in honor of these three SEALs. And we've got a couple other surprises in store.
Just so everybody knows for our listeners, check out the websites www.savetheseals.com, saveourseals.com, and freetheseals.com. Those are the three main websites we're going to be talking about next week. Those are the three big sites that are doing the fundraising for the Legal Defense Fund for these guys. And we're going to try to see if we can get ARF Commerce to step up to the plate and help our warriors out. These guys are frontline warriors. They were just doing their job. A guy got a little bit of a bump and a bruise, and then now they're going to face court-martial charges for it. It's just disgusting. It's a disgusting travesty of justice. And I really want to see ARFCOM step up big for this.
And I think they will. In true ARFCOM fashion, our membership is a fantastic group of people who really believe in the cause and what we're doing. And that's why we brought the forces together to dedicate our first all-inclusive show in honor and hopefully tribute to those three SEALs who, in my estimation, are wrongfully accused.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that they're wrongfully accused. Once we get into the story behind this a little bit next week, people can kind of see the timeline of how everything broke down, and it's really fishy. Let's just say that it's a really fishy situation.
I believe it's political correctness run amok, and hopefully justice will prevail.
Now, these websites that we mentioned, SaveTheSeals.com, SaveOurSeals.com, and FreeTheSeals.com, they actually sell apparel, right, for these causes? And so you're not just making just a flat-out donation. You're actually getting something back in return that you can show your support for these SEALs.
You could give a flat-out donation, direct donation. If you want to wear apparel to show your support of the SEALs, if you go to PipeHittersUnion.com, and basically what pipe hitters are, it's kind of a nickname out there. These are the people who follow the warrior code. They're the usually people in the special operation units, law enforcement, SWAT, mobile response teams, that kind of thing, who live every day to the fullest and believe 100% in the warrior code. Well, you can buy support whales where they say save our seals, and you can advertise basically on behalf of them. A portion of that goes towards the Warrior Defense Fund. You can give money directly to the Warrior Defense Fund. You can give money directly towards an individual attorney firm. There's various ways. We have Scott Taylor coming on, who, as you mentioned, is running for Congress in Virginia's 2nd District. We can raise funds for him. He's a former Navy SEAL who obviously understands the plight of his brothers, and he's going to be somebody that hopefully he can put in the office so these things don't happen again. So he'll be an advocate for us in the future. We've got a variety of ways of giving money and showing our support. So I want to see ARFCOM really come to the forefront of this.
Yeah, so do I. And if you live in Virginia, especially if you're in that 2nd District, check out Scott Taylor. This guy is a very, very good candidate. He's a very ARFCOM type guy. He supports the Black Rifle. He supports Second Amendment causes. He supports our warriors in the field. He's one of those perfect ARFCOM type candidates. Please check him out if you live in Virginia, especially in that 2nd District.
Most certainly, John. And also, if someone, because they're unemployed or don't have the funds currently, they can do things. They can send letters to their congressmen and women. They can sign the petitions that are out there. Human Events has one. The American Spectator has another. You can follow the plight of the trio on Facebook and Twitter. And the accounts are very, there's one of them that's as high as 250,000 members, friends, and associates. So it's out there. So you can do your part, even if you don't have any funds, by just signing the petitions or sending a letter or calling your Congress representative.
That's
that would
right.
be something that will also go to help the bottom line in their plight.
Yep, and we're going to urge everyone next week to make sure that everybody who listens gets the word out that they do something and that they also pass the word on to one or two other friends that maybe aren't ARFCOMers or aren't listening to the show. And we're going to try to get this as big as we possibly can. And I'm really excited for next week. So we have that to look forward to. I'm really excited about that. Let's talk a little bit of gun news, shall we?
Sure.
We know that Congress, I saw this on NRAILA.org. Congress is going to vote next week to try to, on the gun ban repeal, is that right?
They're going to. We have an alert out, and I invite everybody to go to the website and follow it next week. Basically what happens, every year, the District of Columbia has a delegate, does not have a Congress member, but has a delegate, Eleanor Holmes Norton. Some of you may know her. She's extremely anti-gun, but they're bringing forward for consideration next week, the D.C. Voting rights to see if they will pass a law that will allow representation for the D.C. federal enclave. Attached to that piece of legislation is D.C. gun rights, which will basically reinforce what we had in Heller and lift any restriction whatsoever to keep and bear arms in D.C. So hopefully that will go through. We'll see what happens. There's kind of a question of constitutionality because the Constitution states that you have to be a state in order to have representation. So I don't know how that's going to go and bear out, but we're going to be looking at it. Please, if you're not a member of NRAILA.org, it's free, sign up. But the alerts will be coming out, and there's going to be various action points that we may need to press you into taking.
Yeah, it's going to be an important vote next week. It really is. So make sure we want everybody, like you said, even if you're not an NRA, formal NRA member, you can join NRAILA.org for free. You can get their alerts, and then you can make a difference for gun owners just with your NRAILA membership. So make sure everybody checks NRAILA.org every day next week. They're going to have all the updates. It's HR 157, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Is that right? Yeah, it's HR 157. And it's going to be an interesting vote, how this goes down. I'm sure it will draw along party lines as it has, all the votes have been recently.
John, can I bring up this one little bit of information about NRA and ILA real quickly?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. I just want everybody to know, when you join the NRA, and let's say normally if it's not discounted, it's $35 per year. I want everyone to know that $10 automatically is dedicated towards your magazine of choice. The other $25 goes towards supporting your shooting disciplines, all of them, from Black Powder to Black Rifle. None of that money that you, when you join the NRA goes towards advocation of any type of legislation or any type of grassroots activity. That's all covered separate and apart by NRA's Institute for Legislative Action. All that lobbying effort has to be independently funded. I just want everybody to know that. So when you join the NRA, it's not automatically your $35 if you're an annual member. That goes to perpetuating the shooting disciplines, marksmanship, safety, Eddie Eagle, refuse to be a victim, all those great programs. Everything else is raised separate and apart and independently of that to advocate on in the states as well as in the Capitol. Federally, all has to be raised independently. And they do a great job doing that. And there's been a couple threads out there saying that we're losing this or we're losing that. That's not the case. Forbes magazine came out a few years ago and basically told us that the reason why things are happening, the most effective lobbying group when it comes to the Second Amendment, is the National Rifle Association. But you brought up President Bill Clinton. When he lost the midterm elections during his stretch when he was the president, he sat there and gave full credit to the reason was the National Rifle Association. We're powerful. We're still out there. We still advocate for the – now we have 4.3 million members. But when we're out there, you and I, John, and everybody else who belongs, we're also advocating for those who do not belong to our organization.
Right.
We advocate for everybody because we're the oldest civil rights organization in the country, the oldest one. So we're out there. I just want to clear that up. I saw some of the stuff. If I was to type all that out, I'd get carpal tunnel syndrome.
Yeah,
I just want people to know. They can always get a hold of me. They can IM me. But sometimes when they sit there and they start casting their stones, let's get the information correct.
Yeah, and I want to just make a point about what you said about the lobbying efforts of the NRA. I heard a senator talking about lobbyists last year. It was kind of an open discussion forum, and people were asking him, you know, how do you be a more effective lobbyist, and what are the best lobbying strategies? And his answer was pretty point blank, that if you want to be a good lobbying organization or a good lobbyist, you copy the NRA model, because they are without a doubt the most powerful voice in Washington, the most powerful lobby in Washington. So anyone who thinks the NRA is losing their luster or read that New York Times piece today, the hatchet job, you're sadly mistaken if you believe that. The NRA is without a doubt the most powerful lobby in Washington, and thank goodness that it's a Second Amendment lobby and it's working for our gun rights.
Well, certainly. And, you know, I'm the first one to give praise where praise is due. There's a lot of state-based organizations that do a great job. Earlier I mentioned VCDL. They do a great job in the Virginia, in the whole state of Virginia. There's in Arizona, the Arizona Civil Defense, Civilian Defense League did a fantastic job there. There's various state organizations within the NRA. New York State Rifle and Pistol Association is one of them, which I'm the vice president, who do great jobs every single day. But we all work in conjunction. And sometimes the NRA can take a visible lead, and sometimes we're just behind the curtain pulling the strings. And there's other times, to be perfectly honest with you, where the state organizations do a great job on their own. And the NRA sits back and applauds them. Is that the best thing to do?
Yeah,
but we're all
everyone.
In it together. So if we sit there and start working together and rowing the boat in the same direction, we'll get a lot more done, as opposed to start sniping at each other. Because that's what the liberal left wants us to do.
Yeah, they definitely want to divide and conquer. That's straight out of their playbook. We got to stick together, all the organizations, whatever organizations each of us is a member of, we need to support them, and we need to support the others, even if maybe we're not a member of them, we need to support.
Exactly.
So one last thing I wanted to get to, Joe, before I let you go, is we had some really good news, actually, this week in gun laws. In Arizona, the governor, Brewer, signed the constitutional carry into law for Arizona. What was behind that? Do you know?
Well, I tell you, this is something that's great. It basically nullifies any type of permit needed. It's, as you so aptly put, it's named constitutional carry because that's already covered in the Constitution that we have the right to keep and bear arms. There is no ambiguity about it. It's the citizens of the great state of Arizona can carry the firearms, either open or concealed, whichever which way they like. The language is very clear. There's no requirement for them to obtain a permit. They can carry concealed, and they can carry. They can do the same thing with states that have reciprocity. Excuse me, with other states that honor the Arizona law. So it was very, very good news. I'd like to also state that we have a governor, or we have somebody running in the Republican primary by the name of Buzz Mills. Some of the listeners may know of him. He is the owner of Gunsight, the great training center. And Buzz is running for, in the Republican party, he's running for their gubernatorial nod. And
in
he
Arizona.
Came out for this legislation about 2 weeks ago. Obviously, he's a great advocate of concealed carry and firearms in general. So I'd like to have people take a look at his campaign.
That's in Arizona, right?
That's in Arizona. Buzz Mills. Owen Buzz Mills.
So if you're in Arizona and you're a conservative, you're a gun owner, that's probably going to be another ARFCOM prime candidate. I mean, the guy owns Gunsight, right?
He owns Gunsight. He most likely will be an endorsed candidate. Both Buzz and I came on as freshmen to the NRA board last year. We became good friends. I recommend him 1,000%. But we have an opportunity now to put somebody in the governor's mansion in Arizona who truly, truly understands Second Amendment and the Second Amendment freedoms.
Yeah, that's heartening. It's really cool to see all these candidates coming out this year. People that I don't think, you know, had things not gone the way they've gone in Washington for the last year and a half, 2 years. Some of these candidates, I don't think they ever would have attempted political office, but I think now they're just so fed up with the way things are going that we're getting these quality candidates, people that would never have even thought to run for political office. Now they're going to run for political office. And for us, we can't ask for anything better than that.
Most certainly, John. And, you know, tip of the hat, or the tri-corner hat, to the Tea Party movement, to the 912, and to other grassroots organizations such as the NRA, that have been advocating these great people to throw their hat in the ring.
Yeah, it's just great. I'm so excited for November. We've got guys like John Wayne Tucker, who we've had on the show, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Scott Taylor's running. This is just really neat. It really is.
Well, most certainly. These are the people, and if you look, I'll try to get Buzz to come on the show. These are the people that we obviously want to identify. We want to support all we can and get behind their candidacy, but finally the word's going to get out.
Yeah, this is neat. Hey, Joe, thanks a lot for coming on the show as usual. I love starting out with you. You give us a great burst of energy at the beginning of the show and all the work you do behind the scenes working for gun rights. People just have no idea all the different organizations you're involved with. I just wanted to thank you personally and once again give you a happy Patriots Day on the way out of here.
As well to you and all of ARFCOM, have a great show.
Thanks. Okay, next up, we have Goat Boy. That's right, the one and only Goat Boy, the code monkey for AR15.com. This is the first of a two-part interview that I did with him to talk about some of the changes coming up to AR15.com, some of the stuff people have requested, and kind of just let you see what goes on behind the scenes a little bit with all the programming and that type of thing. It's not as easy as some people think just with the sheer volume of work this guy does. It's amazing. You'll find out a little bit more right now in this interview. And we have a special surprise for you today. ARFCOM's very own Goat Boy is on the show with us. He's going to kind of let everybody know all the things that go on behind the scenes at AR15.com and some of the upgrades that we have to look forward to on AR15.com. How are you today, Goat Boy?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing well. I'm glad you took some time out. I know you are a very busy man. I know the type of hours you work coding and dealing with disputes and keeping everything rolling smooth on AR15.com, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, I also keep Ed Sr. out of trouble.
Oh, you keep him out of trouble.
Those fights he's been having on the bus. You know, we gotta keep Epic Beard Man number two.
Epic Beard Man. Exactly. Ed Sr. is Epic Beard Man number two. Does he have the shirt?
No. I don't even know if he's seen the video for it, but
we gotta get him one of those shirts. That would be epic.
he's an old guy, so we gotta kinda bring him along little by little with stuff on the online. Don't wanna overwhelm him.
No, that's right. We had him on last week on the show, I believe it was.
Yep.
And he was a great guy. He was really interesting to talk to. I learned a lot about him that I did not know actually. But anyway, on to some AR-15 stuff. I know you're doing a lot of work, and you've got lists and lists of stuff and improvements and bugs that need to be fixed and things you need to change with the site. So let's just talk about some of the things coming up, changes to AR15.com, so all the users and members, everyone can kind of get an idea of where you're headed. First thing I wanted to ask you about was the search function. You've got a new search function that's in the works, and it's in beta right now, I guess, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you and a select few, I think, have already had access to it. I'm pretty sure you've got access to it now. So
yes,
I'll go over it for the masses, what to look forward to. Basically, the search is one of the most hated things on the site. The reason for it is we've always been prioritized the performance of the site above all else. I mean, for those people who've been around since the old days, we're talking, you know, the old UBB site, 96, 97, 98. They can definitely feel the pain when we talk about reliability. In the past, the site just either ran slow or was dead completely a lot of the time. So it's always been our goal since we kind of, you know, started moving past that time frame to make sure everything was running smooth and running quick. So that's one of the reasons the search was always, you know, the red-headed stepchild of the site. So with that in mind, we've taken the time to completely rebuild the thing from the ground up the way it should be. And what you'll find is pretty much what's common to, you know, a lot of the sites out there, a lot of the forum software. The one thing to keep in mind is the size, the sheer size of the site, even the stuff that we keep on what we call the live servers versus the archive servers, it's just a ton of information. So, it takes some really tight, software to make sure that we're not wasting resources, that we're handling inefficiently and all that.
Right.
I guess the bulk of the search questions or concerns revolve around being able to find discussions by searching the thread bodies and all that. And I can let you know now that that is a part of this, the release that's coming up. There probably will be a write-up in Team, I'd say in the next week or so, with more specifics on how it looks, you know, a screenshot of it, and the functionality. It's safe to say that this is definitely a huge improvement. You'll be able to search, you know, topic titles, bodies, authors, mixed combinations of those. You'll be able to sort on different criteria, such as, you know, post dates and thread reply counts and all that, so you can kind of have total control over the results. In addition, one of the nice things about the new one, you'll be able to see the results in two different formats, either the topic listing, which is what's standard today, or a post format, which is like a, I don't know, 300-word excerpt from the post that match the search criteria, and each one of those will have a link directly to that post, so you can hop into a thread via the search right at the post or reply that met your criteria. It's a little bit, you know, more detailed and more depth. The only thing we gotta, you know, keep in mind is that it does use more resources. It's a huge index that it's going through, and it does take a little bit longer to run. So just, you know, keep that in mind.
I messed around with it a little bit, and I like it. It's a lot easier to search and find exactly what you're looking for without, you can get a lot more specific with it. And I didn't really notice that it took that much longer, to be honest with you.
Well, most people are used to just the default searching, which is, you know, just doing either a topic or an author. Now you have the flexibility of doing both. On top of that, you've got the flexibility, if you noticed, you can pick, the keyword searches you can mix up into search for a phrase, a specific keyword, or all the keywords. So if you type in, you know, Magpul Dynamics, you can search for the phrase Magpul Dynamics. You can search for instances where both the words are in the same thread or subject title, or one or the other.
Right.
So the more complex your search is, the more parameters you put in, the wider the date range, then the longer it's going to take.
Right. I like it, though. It's going to be a great addition once it goes live to
the rest of everyone else. I think that people are going to love it.
Yeah, I hope so, because I, you know, all the death threats and the you know, butt whoopings that everybody wants to line up.
Yeah, you were telling me about that when we were talking earlier. You guys, look, ARFCON, you guys need to understand that when they make these changes to the site, they don't just go in and say, we're going to make a change, and then they make the change. They always ask for feedback, right? You guys always ask for feedback from everyone before you even start the change, right?
Well, always is a tough word to use, but the majority
mostly.
Of the time, yes, especially anything big. I mean, we've always gone to the team forums, usually around the time of the release. Now we use the lifetime members, give us a great little subculture, because what we can do is take stuff, give it to them, the mods, and the staff, and we have a great amount of feedback from both users and, you know, I guess, perceived staff. So we get a good mix of input from the three of them. And then typically after that, we go right to the team forum, let everybody know what's going on, what's coming down the pipe, and they can get a chance to see it. And then it goes live. So, yeah,
So no more death threats, you guys. Everyone listening, quit sending him death threats because you don't like the way something was changed.
Those have actually gone away, you know.
Have they? Okay, good, good. Don't tell him you're going to kick his ass or kill his dog or anything like that.
Yeah, that's so common, but that's all right.
He works his ass off for the site, and he does. And you're going to hear as we go along through this interview all the different things. He's got 30 pots on the stove at once, and he's got to keep them all from boiling over.
Always.
Let's talk about the E&E. That's always a big hot topic of discussion. Now, you've got some changes coming up to the equipment exchange, and let's talk about that for a minute.
All right, another one that people want my head over. okay. The old EE versus the new EE / classified. First, let's make the distinction. The old EE is the, you know, the old forum engine, that one that everybody loves. And the classified section is the new EE wannabe that everybody hated, or the majority did. What we're going to do is bring the best of both worlds together. There are things that the new engine does, can do, and brings to the table that everyone will benefit from. Now, the big concern with it, or the big hate, was the way it functioned in terms of look and feel. I'd say some of the listing, but mostly it just didn't have that friendly kind of feel. So what's going to happen, or what's been happening, is little by little we're moving in the functionality. I mean, again, this is being rebuilt. It's going to look the same as what the old EE or the current EE, whatever you want to call it, the favorite son EE is already at. It's going to look exactly the same. It's going to function the same, and it's just going to have more tools behind it. So you'll have the zip code searching and all that stuff that people loved from the classified. This means the classified, or the new EE, will be disappearing. And more on that later on, but pretty much it's going to be gone. It's going to be back to one EE, which is the most important thing. One equipment exchange, everybody's happy, and should address all the issues. Now, obviously, there's going to have to be some changes in order for some of the functionality to go into play. The automatic feedback, the no bumping, you know, to manage, both for the mods and for people listing and selling. You know, there'll be tools that'll automatically bump stuff for you. You'll be able to set them to automate. Whenever things are sold, you're going to have to be more diligent about that, because otherwise it'll be automatically bumping ads that are already gone.
Right.
So, you know, we'll still have to manage some of it, but it'll be a lot easier on both the staff, the mods, as well as people listing stuff. I guess the other thing to keep in mind is, in order to do some of these advanced features, like the zip code search and all that, we're going to need to collect that data. So, some point in time, it'll be in the profile, most likely, to have your zip code in there if you want it. And ads with zip codes obviously allow for a very, well, semi-generic location to be used in terms of face-to-face transactions and things of that caliber where, you know, you want something, you're going to sell it, you want it just face-to-face. Well, now your zip code's up there. You don't have your address. You don't have anything. Yeah, people can probably find your city and all that junk, but you're leaving it pretty wide open. So it's, you know, security-wise and for people who are pretty protective of their information, that it shouldn't be as big of an issue. You know, we're not going to ask you for your full address.
Right. But just some way so, you know, if I want to locate a seller that's close to me, I'm not going to have a problem doing that.
Exactly. And for guys, it's mostly the sellers who look for that face-to-face because they don't want to go through the trouble of going to an FFL and all that.
Right.
So, you know, it simplifies things if people use that. You don't have to, but listing like a face-to-face type ad with no zip code and just putting in a state, you know, you're going to get less results.
Right.
If you put in the zip and people can search by zip, you're going to have results coming up in that search and, you know, other tools that we can build in. It'll make it a lot easier for everybody else. So I think, you know, that kind
of...
So
for a couple minutes of extra time when you're making your listing, it'll be that much more effective to sell.
Yeah, a little sacrifice isn't going to kill you. I mean, just know that that information doesn't give you away, you know. And it's just one more way to improve the system. And again, it's not going to be mandatory. You don't want to put your zip code in. Your results won't come back with the zip code searches.
Right. Okay. So yeah, it's just another tool in the toolbox for people to use if they want to sell their stuff more effectively. And I like that.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I made a list of all the things we've talked about. Some of the main points we wanted to hit. The content engine you said is going to see some changes. Is that right?
Yeah. This one's mostly for the moderators, the technical forums. They get used the most. And what it is just simply a content editor, so a content engine. You know, guys go in, write up their article, an FAQ, cleaning guide, whatever it is. They use the tool, they create it, then they link it into the forum, usually in the resource section at the top. Right now, it needs a little bit of work. It needs a love. So it's going to get a serious overhaul, and that's high on the list just because our mods have been asking for it, and we want to provide that for them because typically when I look at the list of stuff to do, staff and mod stuff isn't as high to me as functionality for users.
Right.
And, you know, fixing stuff that's broken, obviously. But so I usually have them on hold, and they don't get a lot of toys and toy upgrades. So this one is mostly for them. But it benefits everyone because it allows us to write more documents on the site to share, and an easier way to get information, especially repeat info, so the same questions aren't always being asked.
I really like the idea of the content, of fixing the content editor, because, like you said, it's going to help everybody on the site. It's going to make the mods' jobs easier, but it's also going to, there's going to be that much more information available for everybody that wants the information. Like you said, cleaning guides or you know, range report type stuff, or just any type of information you want. You know, it's going to be there for you when you want it.
Yeah, and we can build, by redoing the whole thing, it's going to pretty much look the same. It's just going to have a lot of different functionality in it. I mean, we've expanded it a little bit here and there, but we'll probably do a section that has the content searchable and kind of listed so you can kind of go through the documents without having to be on the forums. So it's just another way to get information, you know, from a different angle. One of the things that's been requested, and actually we never even talked about this one, is something similar, is a user, kind of a search. So people can do searches on users and kind of pull up their profiles and kind of see who's on the site and what's not, and who's not. That's something that's on the list that's going to be coming. This will be kind of similar. You'll be able to look up content, you know, search by title, whatever.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. You didn't tell me about that.
Yeah, I know. That's something that's been requested for a long time, too. It's just, you know, there's so many things that people want, and there's so many tools that are needed, and there's so many overhauls that need to get done, bug fixes, tweaks, and there's always, and that's just on the code side, and there's always so many things going on in terms of projects, you know, SCBR stuff, planning that stuff takes time, and then executing it, it's more work, and, you know, we've got side projects, and we've got problems and issues, and everything takes time, and it really is just, you know, it's a joy sometimes to get into the code and actually be able to work with my mind focused on it as opposed to dealing with some of the other stuff that goes on. But no, it's a lot of fun. Everything, you know, it's good to help people out. So even when it's a nightmare EE issue, I'd rather we were helping people out to resolve those issues than just leaving them stranded.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about some of the IM tools. You're going to change the IM tools a little bit?
We're actually just gonna, we just need to do an expansion of the tools. Again, a lot of stuff that's been requested. Another item that's, you know, near the top of the list, to get completed. I think the high one on that is the archiving function, or basically being able to take a bunch of IMs and email them to yourself. There will be better formatting than previously. Before, it was just like a text dump, which wasn't very attractive, made it harder to read. This will be a more formatted, probably be able to do a text or HTML option. Then you just dump in your email address, and actually it'll probably send it to the one that's on the site anyways for your account. So it'll just send copies of all those IMs to you and then move them into the deleted folder or something similar, just so that you can archive stuff, clean it out without losing it. And again, that's something people have been asking for and need to deliver on that. So.
Okay. You told me another thing people were asking for was for members, team members, and everyone, if they could get their online status hidden, so like it doesn't show that they're online necessarily unless they want to be. Is that?
Yeah, there's always little requests here and there. There's always little tweaks that make a lot of sense, and they get, you know, thrown into the list at different points. And one of those things is the ability to just turn off the online indicator that shows up in the threads. Again, that's not a big deal. It's just a small little thing that's coming. I mean, there's probably, I don't know how many we talked about, but there's a ton of little things like that. And that's just going to be a profile setting. You go in, you say, don't display my online indicator. And that way, if you're using the site and you don't want to be really bothered when you're
right.
posting, people can't see if you're online or offline through that. One of the things that's coming, again, that we didn't really touch base on, but we've always talked about setting up like a friends list. You know, we've got the ignore list now that everybody always wanted. We wanted to really do a friends list too, which basically would circumvent a system like that, where, okay, your online indicator doesn't show up for anyone except for people on your friends list.
Right.
And obviously staff and whatnot. So, you know, you're going to get things like that. Notifications, you know, if a friend is on or logs into the site. So it's little things like that just to make the site, the community a little bit closer knit, you know, track who you want to track, threads you want to track, find the stuff you need, have fun with it, spend more time enjoying the site and sharing and, you know, laughing about Costa pictures. Then,
that thread is hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But all these little things, you know, to you, they might be little, but when you add them all up, it makes for a lot of changes, and all those changes makes it for a big change and a more positive experience, definitely for the site. For instance, you're going to do some changing on the subscribe tool, is that right?
Yeah, we're, again, by request, and it's something we had looked at before when we first merged it over. That was one of those tools where people wanted me dead for one reason or another.
That's just
but the subscription tool basically took away the active topics, because now it's automatic for team members. You just set your default to subscribe and anything you post in, and it shows up in your subscription list. Instead of tagging, you just subscribe. You don't have to type tag in it anymore. So one of the things we wanted to add, little things, you know, like adding the ability to subscribe to a forum itself versus a thread. This way, if you're, you know, a moderator that wants to keep track of whenever there's a new post, or if you're just really into certain type, you know, certain forums, you know, like the Build It Yourself, the AR building forum, you can subscribe to that forum anytime a new thread is posted. You get, you know, some kind of notice, and it shows up in your subscription list. There'll be probably a tab for forums and show you like new threads in each forum, something along those lines. But that's something that people have asked about, and I've always said, yeah, it's coming. So that's up there on the list, too.
That is the first part of our two-part Goat Boy interview. We'll have the second part on next week to tell us a little bit more about what changes are coming up for AR15.com. Something that was interesting to me in that is that he gets death threats from people when the site gets changed. I mean, come on, guys. Now you're taking things just a little too serious, I think. The guy works hard. He keeps things up and running. Now, we've had some technical difficulties, I know. We had problems with the looping, and the show cut out for a little bit. Please bear with us. If the show cuts out on you, try closing your browser and opening it back up. I know everyone wants to hear the ACR interview coming up in a little bit. Just if you cut out, come back on. Or go directly to bbsradio.com. Go to that website, bbsradio.com. Go to their listen, click on the listen thing on the left-hand column. And then it's station two. We're on station two, and there's some different options there for you to listen. So that might help you out if you can't get in using the button off of ar15.com. Go to www.bbsradio.com. Right now we're going to get into this week's Get to Know. It's one of the favorite sons of ar15.com, Bama Shooter. We'll get to that right now. And this week on Get to Know, we have an outstanding guest as usual, one of the ARFCOM standards, one of the guys that really totes the flag for AR15.com. His name is Bama Shooter, and I'm sure you guys all know him very well. How are you today, Bama?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you today?
I am doing outstanding. Thanks for taking some time to be on the show with us. And without further ado, let's dive headfirst into these questions. What do you say?
Okay, go for it, brother.
Okay. The first one is one of the important ones on ARFCOM. You know it very well. 9mm or 45?
45, but I carry a 9mm.
Oh, whoa. How does that work?
Well, the training and the cost of ammo, I ended up having to switch back over to a 9mm because I couldn't afford to shoot a 45 anymore.
Fair enough. So 45, if all things being equal, but since they're not, you have to go 9mm.
Yes.
Okay, cost-wise, all things being equal. All right, the second question, you know this one's important as well. Beans or no beans?
Beans.
Beans all the way. Oh, so you're a southerner, but you're going beans. So it's mostly the Texas guys.
Yeah, the Texas guys are great, but I like beans in my chili.
Question number three, Glock 1911 or something else?
SIG 220.
Oh, a SIG guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Can't complain about that. That's a good answer.
SIG 220.
Okay, now, most of us know the answer to this question. If you don't know the answer to this question already, you probably haven't been on the site very long. But what do you do for a living?
Well, actually, I have two jobs. My daytime job is I'm director of safety and security for a private entity. And my weekend nighttime job is a police officer. I work part-time as a police officer.
So what do you do as far as the full-time day job? What are your duties there?
Checking on the safety and security of the facility. I do on-site training. I also go visit customers because in my certain segment of the industry, it's very important on the customer side. They want to know about your safety programs and your security programs that you have going on. So I have to do reports for them to show them what we're doing, give them tours of our facility to show them what kind of operation that we have.
Oh, okay.
And a lot of times, I just sit around all day and chat on ARFCOM, actually.
Nothing wrong with that. That makes the job easy. That makes the day go by easy that way.
2 hours of real work in a day.
Oh, wow. See, we all need a job like that. Where do we sign up for that one?
Yeah.
I was reading your biography on AR15.com, and I thought it was interesting that you're a law enforcement officer, but you keep your civilian CCW active.
Yes, that's true.
And that's, you're not required to do that, though, right?
No, I do not. No, I'm not. It's just one of the things I know really doesn't mean a whole lot to other people, but yeah, I just don't really feel it's right that CCW permits are required to begin with. So I decided I'd keep mine up, even though I had mine before I got into law enforcement. I kept mine throughout my first time in law enforcement. Then when I got out of law enforcement, I had my CCW permit. I kept it active all along because, you know, you never know when you're going to be a cop or not, as far as these things go these days. But, I just didn't feel it was right to – everybody else had to get a CCW permit, but not me to have one too. So that's kind of like a little silent protest thing. Yeah, the only time I may have used my law enforcement credentials was traveling to a state such as Illinois or something like that. You know, I did take my firearm with me. I kind of bent my own rule there a little bit, but, you know, my safety is paramount, so.
I also understand that you were working for Blackwater before, right?
Yes, sir. I did 4 months working for Blackwater and ATS in New Orleans after Katrina.
Now, have you heard about the charges on the former president of Blackwater?
Yes, sir, I have.
And what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that the laws that they're being charged with are shouldn't be in place anyway. You know, I don't think that our founding fathers foresaw the where we'd have to have permitting and all this other kind of stuff in order to own firearms, and so I don't think that's right. But from what I've read of what was the later charges or later information that came out, it doesn't really sound good to me. It does sound like they violated the law, but you know, will it hold up in court or then plead to something else? I really don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. It's one of those things where you know that somebody's got an agenda just because of who it is, and so any charges that come with it, you got to kind of take with a grain of salt, I think.
Yeah, I really didn't expect these charges to come to fruition, but I think with the thing with the guys getting off on the murder charges for the National
Square
shooting,
yeah,
and all that, Blackwater just has had this big target paint on their back, and I just think they're just going to come after them.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
Anyway, they can.
Yeah, they were so high profile, and so many people were gunning for them that eventually someone was going to do something. That's what I think.
Yes.
So if you're settling in on a Friday evening for a nice long session of ARFCOM, or you just got off duty and you're going to sit down for a couple hours and surf the web, what's your go-to drink? What's your drink of choice?
Either Blue Moon or Wild Turkey.
Blue Moon, the beer, right?
Yeah, the Blue Moon, the beer.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. Or some Wild Turkey, good old-fashioned Wild Turkey. Okay, I added a new question last week, and so you're the second person that's going to get asked this, but what's your go-to favorite musical artist or group?
Right now, I kind of like Nickelback. I know a lot of guys on ARFCOM don't like Nickelback, but I enjoy them. I also like Disturbed, and the main rock station here in Birmingham got shut down a few months back, and they switched it over to talk radio, so it's been really sucking here lately, so I haven't really been able to keep up with the latest newest stuff out there is.
But no, those are some good choices. Disturbed especially. I like some of their stuff, definitely. And unlike everyone else on ARFCOM, I'm not too hard on Nickelback. They're okay. I don't mind them at all. I can listen to them.
I had tickets last year for their concert, and my wife was sick. That was, $200 down the drain.
You didn't even get to go, huh?
I didn't even get to go. She was a bigger Nickelback fan than I am, but, yeah, I bought tickets, and she got sick, and we didn't get to go, so, oh, well.
Oh, that's all right. You'll get another chance. That's funny, because women love Nickelback. Women just absolutely love those guys. Now, this is going to be kind of a different question for you because you're site staff, and it's always different to ask you guys these questions about people on ARFCOM, but do you have a favorite poster or someone that you look forward to reading their posts on ARFCOM?
You know, I enjoy so much conversation with so many different guys on there, it's really hard to say that there's any one that sticks out in my mind that I enjoy. I enjoy debating with several guys, so one of the ones that sticks out in my mind that I've enjoyed debating with is El Cid. I think he does a pretty good job of, you know, sticking to the debate and not letting his emotional side get away with him in his posts. I think he does a real good job on it. You know, a lot of them is just, you know, F the police type thing. And but this guy, he kind of sticks to the let's debate the facts. Because, I mean, I've never seen him on the other side of the issue where I was against the police, so to speak. So,
yeah, El Cid, he's a good guy. He is a good guy. And I've noticed that about you. You are very fair when it comes to law enforcement issues, and they always come up on ARFCOM at least once a week. There's a huge law enforcement issue that comes up, and I have noticed you are very, very fair about the whole thing, and I appreciate that. Just from someone who reads up and wants to hear the opinion of a law enforcement officer, you give a very fair opinion.
Well, you know, again, you know, I've been in law enforcement, out of law enforcement, and I only do it part-time, so, you know, I still feel like I try to see things from both sides of the fence. You know, I understand what happens out here on the law enforcement side, but I also know what happens on the civilian side of it, citizen side. I want to make sure I don't get in trouble on that. So I try to look at it both sides. I really do.
Yeah, and it's appreciated. It's noticed. I just want to let you know that. People are noticing it. I know I'm not the only one. Now, do you have a person that you least like to hear post, or maybe a type of person that you could probably do without their type of posts?
I don't really care for the ones that they base a lot of their posts on emotion, and just things are out and outright false. You know, one of the common things in the law enforcement threads is if you shoot a canine, it's the same thing as killing a police officer or a human being, and it's not. Those kind of things, you know, and you try to educate folks. Now, this has been one of my things is I'm not the smartest guy, but I try to help educate people on what actually goes on, what the laws actually are. And I'm no expert, but I try to help them out in that arena. And you know, to me, like a lot of the guys, they just post from emotional side instead of trying to do it in a more logical and debative side. You can not like something and express your opinion in a way that doesn't just come off making you look like a jerk, actually.
Okay. So aside from yourself, obviously, who is your favorite site member or site staff or moderator?
Oh, shoot. There's so many of the good guys on there.
There are. There are. It's a tough one to ask.
I like a lot of the guys. I really don't have any problems with any of them. I have to say 82nd Airborne, he has really guided me a lot from the transition, you know, from the reason becoming a moderator to me becoming a site staff member. He has been a kind of a mentor or whatever to help direct me and guide me in the path that I've been going down since I've been here.
So he kind of took you under his wing and showed you the ropes, as it were.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, he's a good guy. I haven't had a lot of interaction with him, but I do read a lot of his posts, and some of his system messages are pretty funny, too.
Yes, he's a great guy.
Okay, so if you could live anywhere other than Birmingham, Alabama, or the vicinity, where would it be?
I'd probably go to Texas. I've been to, in my other job, I travel the Southeast a lot, and all over the South, actually. So I've got to go meet a lot of off-crime members across the Southeast or South. And the Texas guys, every time I go there, it's always a party. I mean, it's, you know, it's not one or two. We've got 15, 20 people coming out, and it's just amazing the hospitality factor that those guys show out there. It's just, it really is.
Another vote for Texas. That's got to be ARFCOM's second home for everybody. If everyone from ARFCOM wanted, could, I'll bet 90% of them would move to Texas.
Yeah, like I said, you know, the camaraderie the guys out there show and just good folks. I've always felt welcome every time I come out there and visit them. It's always been great.
Sounds good to me. See, I got to get my butt down there one of these days. I have to get down to Texas. All right, let's ask some gun questions. What do you say?
Okay.
All right, so what is your favorite gun right now that you own?
Currently my Glock 19, I guess. It's a light, compact, high-capacity magazine. I carry it at work, carry it off-duty. I'm really liking it. Yes.
It's a really good go-to gun right there. Go ahead.
I use Glock 17 magazines as my backup magazines.
There's nothing wrong with that. Hey, the high capacity is the way to go, in my opinion. If you could have any gun that you don't currently own and it's legal for you to own, what would it be?
Well, I'm currently saving up to get me a Glock 26, but I know that's not what you're looking for. But I'm looking for a corrected version of the ACR one day. With the 1.7 twist, the right barrel. You know, the whole nine yards. I really like the looks of that weapon system. I haven't got to fire one yet, but I really like it.
We actually have representatives from Magpul and Bushmaster coming on right after this interview with you on the show, and I'm going to ask them when the 1.7 barrels come out. So keep your ears peeled, because we're going to find out the answer to that tonight.
Okay.
When was the last time you went shooting? I can't imagine it would have been very long.
Yesterday,
see? That, and I expected an answer like that. At least you didn't have to say, well, today on duty, No. I know you've met ARFCOMers in real life. What's your general impression of ARFCOMers?
They're all been great. You know, I've been to some shooting matches out here in Birmingham with a bunch of the members, and I've met members in the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, I think Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Texas. All over. I've only had one interaction with one that kind of rubbed me kind of wrong, but he was a band member, and he tried to take it out on me, and I didn't. This is before I ever got involved in being a moderator or site staff, so, yeah, I'm like, okay, dude, whatever.
He was still angry.
Nothing to do with me.
He
was trying to take out me. So, tells me he's got a troll account somewhere.
Oh, he's got to have one. I bet 90% of people that get banned somehow find a way to get a troll account.
They try.
They can't, once they're banned, it's like the withdrawal symptoms probably kick in so hard. I can't imagine if I got banned, I'd be mad as hell.
Yeah.
I would, just to miss out on everything, I'd be mad.
Well, I belong to several other online communities, and, I tell you to me, the ARFCOM it's more of a true community. I mean, we have people have their own special areas of talking, the general discussion, the technical forums. I really feel like that we gel really well as a community, as compared to some of the other sites that I frequent.
What is your favorite non-GD section of the forums?
I like looking in the training forums and then also my own hometown forum. The technical forums, there are so many guys that know so much more about that stuff than I do that, you know, I'll breeze, take a look through there every now and then, but, yeah, I don't comment much because, like I said, there's guys out there that know way more, much more about the subject on firearms and the technical aspects of them than I do. So, you know, I try to keep my mouth shut where I don't know something and talk a lot in other areas.
Yeah, that's what I've learned, that as soon as I think I know something about firearms, I go into one of the technical forums and realize just how ignorant I am about
yeah.
the whole thing. Yeah, it's really humbling, but it's very educational, and you just can't get that. You can't get that expertise anywhere else. I'll bet there's not a gun in the world that you couldn't bring up on one of the technical forums, and somebody will have either owns one or has extensive knowledge about it.
And that has happened before. I was posting about a gun that I came across, and it wasn't 15 minutes later. There's somebody posting about their knowledge of it. So it's great. I think the whole forum and the community that we have involved is just great.
Yeah, it's outstanding. Have you ever had to get rid of a firearm and regretted it?
Oh, yeah. When I went through the Big D, I lost about 75% of my firearms.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
You had to sell them?
Yeah, I had to sell them, pay the lawyer fees.
Is there one that sticks out the most as like, oh, if I could have just kept hold of that one?
I had I think it was a 1942 Winchester M1 Garand that was absolutely cherry. It was 99%. 100% matching parts.
Oh, wow.
It was just absolutely outstanding, and I had to let it go. So yeah, that was. I want me another one really bad, but yeah, I lost that one in the Big D. 3 hours of lawyer consultation fees.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts, man. That does. Do you remember the first time you ever got a chance to shoot a gun?
I was 4 years old, and my dad had an AR-15, and he took me out and he held it and let me pull the trigger of it. So I've been involved with AR-15 since I was four.
Wow, at 4 years old you shot an AR-15. That is a good story right there.
Because mom and dad have pictures of me holding it somewhere in their house. But I think the next time that I really got into shooting firearms was I was probably about six or eight, and got to shoot a 357 Magnum or something like that. And then later on, you know, the single barrel 12 gauge. But you know, I've been involved in firearms almost my entire life.
Yeah, it's great when it comes from your dad or your grandpa, and you got that generational thing going on in the family. Just that love just stays there so strong for your whole life.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it's great. So let me ask you a little bit about your training, especially like when you were with Blackwater. Did you go through some of their specific training?
No, sir. I didn't do any training with them. The only thing I did that had anything to do with any training along with Blackwater during that period of time, so we went and shoot, you know, did our handgun qualifications, is we were issued collapsible batons and things like that, and none of the guys really knew the how to use them or anything like that. So I was a baton instructor formerly, so I helped teach them some of the different things as far as using baton. This is all informal, just us guys on the different teams doing different things. So not really anything outstanding during my time with Blackwater and Katrina. You know, it was mostly just a glorified security guard that got paid very well during that period of time.
Okay, let me ask you about that with Katrina and that. What exactly did you do, if you can talk about it, and what are some of the things you saw that stood out to you about that?
I went down there with another company before Blackwater, and, you know, rolling into that city that first night, and it was totally blacked out, was surreal. It was almost like something you'd picture in a movie. I was expecting zombies to pop out at any time. You know, it was just so surreal. The biggest thing that got me was you had so many people who were so compassionate and giving, you know, wanting to help you and wanting to help you out in your situation. Then you had others that were just downright scumbag thieves. I mean, you know, if you left anything sitting for any amount of time, you know, it'd be stolen. So that first company I worked with, one of the things they did was, you know, guarding the electrical people. And, you know, it never would have dawned on me in a million years of having worked disasters and everything in civilian law enforcement to have a cop out there or a security guard guarding a guy who's trying to put your power back on because they were being robbed and shot at and different things like that. And that just totally blew my mind.
Watching it from afar, you know, from the other side of the country and just what you saw on TV, it was surreal. But being there, I can't even imagine having to be there for that. Just there was a lot of rumors about, you know, crime and armed gangs roving around. Did you see any of that?
You know, every night that I was there, you'd hear gunshots. We had some guys one night try to jack one of our SUV rigs. They come out like cockroaches and try to surround you, get people to stop in the street, and they see four armed guys jump out. You know, they scatter and take off. But I didn't get a whole lot of that other than, like I said, you know, you'd hear gunshots every single night. And then one of the disaster recovery centers I was working for later on, anything you left out that the general public could walk by, they'd try to steal it. You got your food or something like that, they snatch your food off your table. It was just amazing to me.
Wow. Yeah.
It was like
amazing.
This whole entitlement thing, you know, if we went out and got food, you know, they'd be like, where's mine? And then there were rampant rumors of us giving away free laptops or free cars, and we'd just get bombarded with people, and they'd get pissed off, and you have to escort them out, and it was just crazy.
Free cars? What could make someone honestly think that they're going to be given a free car in a disaster situation? That is just hilarious.
It was wild.
If you were elected president of the United States, what would be the first thing you would do as president?
I would go after abolishing the NFA Act, the 68 Gun Control Act, the Hughes Amendment, get rid of the import ban on assault weapons and ammunition. I mean, I really want that cheap Norinco ammo back. You know, if we're going to do all this trade with China and send them all this money the way we're doing it, why can't we buy cheap ammo? That'd probably be the first thing I would go after. I would like to go. I mean, I realize you have to work through the legislature to get it done, but I would really like to see those things go away.
I just don't understand how some of these got passed. I really just don't understand that the machine gun ban, the first assault weapons ban. Sometimes it's like the politicians just really do believe that they are their own class of people. It's insane.
Oh, it's totally. And, you know, and to me, anybody who looks at what the Constitution says, I'm sorry, I just don't see how any judge or anybody can look at those laws and not realize that they're unconstitutional. I just don't see how it just baffles my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. So Arizona just passed their law that anyone can carry a weapon concealed there without a permit. What do you think about that?
I think that should be the rule of the land. I mean, I don't remember anybody in the Second Amendment or mentioned in there about having to take a class or a permit, pay a fee for a permit or get training in order to exercise your Second Amendment right. You don't have to do it for the First Amendment, so why are we requiring people to do it for the Second? I don't understand that.
I don't either. Hopefully it'll spread, you know. Hopefully Arizona's got it now. I think we're up to three states, Alaska, Vermont, and Arizona. Hopefully it'll start spreading around a little bit. We can get more states, especially the gun-friendly ones, to sign on to something like that. I know stuff like that is tough just because the politicians that are against it just whine and complain and make such a big deal about it. But I'm hopeful. Well, gun laws have started to get a little bit better in the last couple of years, and I hope we can get them a lot better before we see something negative come down the pipe.
I agree. Well, like in Alabama, they just recently passed legislation finally allowing us to be able to own short barrel rifles and short barrel shotguns through the NFA. They enacted laws back in the 50s that essentially banned short barrel rifles and short barrel shotguns in the state. And it finally got passed, and it actually passed the Senate 31-0, so it's on its way to the governor's desk. So, you know, I've seen a lot of positive changes in that arena in other states, and I just hope it continues. And hopefully with some more court decisions going our way, we can get some of these silly laws struck down.
Yeah, especially with these court decisions going our way. That's the most heartening thing of it all. That's what really gives me optimism that things could really, really get better for us here in the next couple of years. Before I let you go, one more thing. You told me you had to go out on a call today for an umpire and a coach getting into a fight. Is that right?
Yes, sir. I hadn't had a call all afternoon, just running around enjoying the sunshine right before I was supposed to talk to you. Got a call at the ballpark that a coach and the umpire gotten into because the umpire kicked the coach out. And it was just, you know, one of those things you just shake your head at. Just, come on, guys, let's be adults here.
So this is like a Little League game or something for kids?
Yeah, it's a Little League game. Yeah, there's like little 6-7-year-old kids running around. And I'm like, this is just ridiculous.
And so it actually turned into a physical confrontation?
No, they actually didn't get physical. It was a verbal altercation, and then the umpire kicked him out, and then it continued on with a verbal altercation with the fans calling the cops on him. So
the Little League people get more involved in their stuff than...
Oh, yeah.
I used to referee youth little league, and I just after like half a year of it, I was ready to quit. I finished out my first year, and then I said, "I'm never doing this again ever." I just, between the parents and the coaches, it's like, wow, you can't pay someone enough.
I agree.
Well, hey, thanks.
I've got boys that have been in the game for 15 years now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, they've been. You know, my boys have been playing ball since they were like 4 years old, so I've been involved in
it.
So you've
seen it?
Oh yeah, I've seen it firsthand. It just amazes me.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's such a poor example to show for kids when they have to see parents act like that. It's just embarrassing. But hey, thanks a lot for taking some time out. I know how busy you are, and I'm glad we didn't get interrupted during this with a call. And I know you're out there protecting and serving, and we appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Bama.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Y'all have a great afternoon.
Oh, that was Bama Shooter. What a cool guy. I love those southern accents, too. I'm jealous sometimes when I hear those guys talk with that good old boy accent. I love it. I love his answer, too, about for what we could do for president, if he was president. Get rid of all those bad laws. Get rid of all of them. Well, it is the time you all have been waiting for. We are going to talk ACR, the Adaptive Combat Rifle. On the show with us, we have representatives from both Bushmaster and Magpul. Ryan Smith is on from Bushmaster. Drake Clark is on from Magpul. And before we get started, Drake, I understand you just had a birthday, so let me wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm recovering a bit still. It was a good time for sure.
That's the best birthday, the ones you have to recover from.
Definitely.
Before we start talking ACR, I'm going to ask each of you kind of a little bit of your background. We'll start off with Ryan. How did you get started with Remington? How long have you been with them? And what exactly do you do there?
Yeah, so I've been with the Freedom Group, which is sort of a conglomerate, as everyone probably knows, for just about a year now. And I kind of work 80% of my time on Bushmaster, 20% of my time on Remington Law Enforcement Firearms. And prior to that, I was with Rubbermaid Home Products, which is kind of a little zig in my career, but started my career at Nike doing international footwear marketing and research and development, and also worked for a short time at Gerber Legendary Blades.
Okay, that's very interesting. Yeah, that is a zig in your career, going from Nike to Rubbermaid, now with one of the biggest firearm conglomerates in the world.
Yeah, that's, and you know, for me, you know, my professional career is being one thing, but I spent 12 years in the Army and 6 years as a part-time police officer. So, for me, this is my opportunity to kind of get behind my passion and put the two together.
Oh, okay. See, I did not know that about you. I had read a little bit of your biography, but a little bit about your past. I think it was on the Remington site, but I didn't know you were in the Army. Thank you for your service, and you were law enforcement as well. So you have a good background with the firearms.
Yeah, I'm just trying to learn the firearm side now. I've always used them. I just don't know the language, so I'm catching up quick.
Okay. Drake, let's ask you. How long have you been with Magpul, and how did you get involved with them, and what exactly do you do for them?
You know, I've been with Magpul now full-time for about 4 years. I did some consulting side work while I was still a cop prior to that 4 years. I did that for a couple of years working with Rich Fitzpatrick when he was first getting Magpul up off of the ground and running. So I've been there full-time about 4 years. Prior to that, I did about 8 years in law enforcement. I was a cop in Oakland, California for about 4 years, and then moved out to Colorado and was a sheriff's deputy in Boulder County for about 3.5-4 years. And prior to that, I was in the Air Force. Didn't do a whole lot of weapon handling, as you most can imagine, but definitely got my feet wet as a cop in Oakland and was on the patrol rifle team there, and that's when I became very passionate about the AR-15, which ultimately led me to where I am now with Magpul. I've kind of, I wouldn't say gone up the ladder, but as you can imagine, the company has grown over the last several years, so my quote-unquote official title, we're not big fans of titles there, but my title, Senior Director of Sales and Business Development, but I'm kind of a jack of all trades and bounce around the office, clean the bathrooms from time to time, and
whatever needs to be done, huh? So
that's right.
Were you working for Magpul when they made the announcement about the Masada?
Yes, definitely was.
How did that idea come around at Magpul? Was it a group thing? Did someone come into the office one day and said, "Hey, let's do this"? Or how did the idea for it come up?
Well, the idea started long before before I had ever had any involvement with Richard or with Magpul. And the way I understand it is, Rich has always been passionate about the M16 platform, and with his creative background that he's got and his mindset, he was always looking for ways to improve the AR-15, and started off with designing several different components for the AR-15. Ultimately, after several years of thinking about it and tossing this around in his mind with some other individuals that were involved in the project, came up with the idea that, hey, you know, this, if we want to do all the things that we want to do and we want to do it right, we need to start off with a clean sheet of paper. So that clean sheet of paper started, I would say, actually getting serious about it sometime in 06, and, you know, went from drawings on a napkin to a little more formalized methods, and ultimately, I believe it was that, the 2007 SHOT Show, we released the Masada. So we, and I know guys have heard the story back and forth for the years that we've been on AR15.com talking about the Masada, but about 4 months from the time of concept of actually drawing things out and having what we thought was fairly close to a design to move forward with until the time we had a functioning prototype prior to going to SHOT Show back in 07. So it was the idea of several guys, I would say Rich Fitzpatrick, the founder and one of the owners of Magpul, and also Mike Mayberry, who's an, and also another owner of Magpul, was really their baby, and they pushed the design and were really the large inspiration to get the project moving forward. As the project grew, there were lots of other people that were involved in it.
Yeah, let's let everyone kind of know some of the changes it's gone through from conception to production. You know, it takes, people don't understand how long it actually takes to design a rifle from scratch and build it up, and especially when you're trying to do a top-of-the-line EBR like the ACR is. And it's just one sexy-looking gun, I'll tell you what. I see pictures of it, I'm just drooling at the mouth. Let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that, that have gone through, some things that you guys maybe originally designed for it and had to change, or some things that came up that you decided you wanted to add to it.
Sure, sure. I would say, right off the bat, kind of a preface sentence here is I know there's a lot of commentary that goes on back and forth about, yeah, we like Magpul's design better than Bushmaster's design. And really, when it comes down to it, the platform itself is so modular and allows for so many different configurations. Some of the configurations that we initially came out with in our photos when it was still the Magpul Masada, we were pushing that modularity to an extreme, you know, long handguards with short barrels and different things of that nature. When it's all said and done, the changes aesthetically are fairly minor between the difference between the Magpul Masada and the Bushmaster ACR. Some of the ones that you'll notice right off the bat are the integrated flip-up front sight on the Masada. You know, we decided to go away with that, and we understand the end users really wanted to be able to allow them to have a configurable unit to where they could change and put whatever, you know, they desired on that flip-up front sight. So we eliminated that. That's one of the first things you'll notice. The charging handle location. The original Masada design had an aft-mounted charging handle on the left side there. It was not ambidextrous, but it was interchangeable at that point in the design. So those are really, in my mind, the two things that stick out the most. Some guys will say, I like the Magpul design better because it has that folding stock. Well, the Bushmaster design also has that folding stock. It has three different stocks, as a matter of fact. So there's different things that people are looking at different photos and perceiving differently. But in my mind, there's really only two differences, two primary differences in aesthetics. Now, the rails might look a little bit different because, you know, we're in the prototype phase. So very few things aesthetically that are different between the Magpul Masada and the Bushmaster ACR, primarily charging handle location and design and the front flip-up sight. You know, I guess if you really wanted to break it down, you could say that the gas barrel, or the gas block rather, is quite a bit different. It's much more refined in the Bushmaster ACR version. I'll defer to Ryan for some of the more specifics on the things that changed, but my last thought is that, you know, I put a lot of rounds downrange in the prototype Masadas that we had, not just in doing demos, but in testing. And at that point, I was fairly heavily involved in at least pulling the trigger on the Masada. When I received our first samples from Bushmaster of the ACR, of after all the design changes had been made, from a guy that had hands-on on the rifle for as long as I did and put as many rounds downrange as I did, I was ecstatic. I was It was ridiculous. I had tingles and chills, and I know it sounds goofy, but for something that I was as intimately involved in this project as I was, to be able to see something that was a prototype and things that I knew were going to be refined and actually hold something in my hand that was the refined version of that, it was a production rifle. Much, much more put together, more complete thought than the original design was. You know, we built 6 rifles, and we built them at, we had a cost budget that we were trying to stick to, so there were some corners that we had to cut, which anyone who prototypes a weapon is fairly familiar with the steps that that takes, and production version is always going to be much more refined. So I'll leave with that and defer to Ryan for some more of the specific changes that are involved there.
So, yeah, Ryan, go ahead and tell us a little bit about some of the changes you're aware of. It sounds like Drake was there from kind of the beginning. You kind of came in a little bit later, but I know you were very close to this ACR project. Tell us what you saw, some of the changes and enhancements that were made.
Yeah, well, Drake hit on one of the early ones, which was the gas regulator. You know, the gas regulator on the ACR is a 2-setting regulator for suppressed and unsuppressed fire. And so some regulators are kind of more chasing, like, cartridge pressure, and they're trying to let you dial in for kind of low pressure, high pressure, whereas this is kind of like an on-off, more or less, for the different demands that firing with a suppressor brings. And it's really tricky to get that tuned properly. So a lot of work went into that. But if you go, like, inside, for instance, inside the gas regulator and look at the end of the piston, one of the things I think is just brilliant design, it has actually a cutting tool. So as the piston's moving and it's turning inside the gas block, it's actually cutting carbon away to keep it unfouled, which I think is pretty smart idea. And I don't know if that was an early-on design aspect of it, Drake, or if that's something that came on later. But, you know, that regulator took a lot of work because you got to do a lot of work with the port diameter to make sure you're getting the right gas off the bore and then making sure you port off enough so you're not overcharging the cycle of the weapon. And then the other thing, and it's really hard to point to because, like Drake said, visually the firearm is almost identical. What you can't see is just all the revision that's happened to the internal parts. Magpul did an incredible job building those 6 prototypes, and I can't even fathom how they did that in that short amount of time. But we're, instead of looking at prototype parts, we're trying to figure out how to make thousands and thousands of these units. And
right.
It's just a completely different type of operation. So we've gone inside and tried to simplify. Like, for instance, on the bolt carrier group, which is an AR-180 style bolt carrier, there was I believe it's called a firing pin capture block that kind of hung off the side and sat behind the firing pin to make sure it didn't extend too far to the rear, and we were able, through just good design, eliminate that altogether. So there was a moving part and springs and other pieces that we were able to eliminate and just make the design more simple so that's one less thing that can fail. And you kind of replicate that over and over again. And those are all the little refinements that, having built ARs for 30 years, Bushmaster could just kind of put their mind to and kind of refine. So, I mean, definitely, I mean, we talk partnership a lot, and we couldn't have done it unless the design was there to begin with. And I think that we've added some good things along the way to get it ready for manufacture.
Yeah, I cannot wait to get my hands on one. I can't wait to get one.
We'll definitely have to make that happen.
Oh, yeah, they're coming out, and I've seen them now. I've seen them on Gunbroker. I've seen them all over the place. I have not seen one here locally. I live in Utah, but I know there's a couple here. I've heard that there's a couple places here that have one. I'm going to check them out. You know, when the original price point came out for the ACR, there was a lot of grumbling. There still is a lot of grumbling today about the price. Now that it's released, like I said, I've seen them on Gunbroker going for as low as $2,100. You know, for an enhanced top-of-the-line rifle, I don't know how much people can complain. You had a team of engineers you had to hire to do R&D on it and to refine it. You had to tool up an entire brand-new production line for it. What are some of the things that sets this ACR apart from the pack, you know, to let people know that you're not just getting another AR-15 here. You're getting an entirely new weapon system.
Well, you know, I guess if, John, if we can backtrack real quick and just talk price, since we'll throw it out there, I know that's been a huge concern within the marketplace, and guys are a little confused. And Magpul has been somewhat silent on the forums for that. As you well aware, sometimes it's difficult to make everyone happy. No matter what reply we felt we threw up on AR15.com, we would have had a hard time keeping everyone happy, and it would have just given more room to to kind of throw rocks at us, and we're trying to avoid that until we have the right opportunity to have an open dialogue about it. And you know, this is our opportunity here. So I'm feeling the rocks rolling my direction already, and I'll just come out and say that you know, we, at the time that the Masada was developed, Magpul was we're up and coming company, but we are a fairly small company. We had limited resources, and we have very high hopes. Companies composed of patriots and veterans and all that jazz. That said, when the idea of the Masada, we really wanted to be able to put a rifle in guys' hands for, you know, approximately $1,500. And that's what we've always said. We've never been absolute in anything that we've said with this, because ultimately we didn't know. We knew that we wanted to build a modular weapon. We knew that we wanted to build an affordable modular weapon. But that price point is something that you can't ever nail down early on in prototype phase. So that said, with the estimated price of that being around that $1,500 range, you know, we were a bit naive thinking that. We were early on in development with this, and we were talking about how much we wanted to see this rifle for and about how much we could sell this for. But, you know, we're naive. We are fairly new to the weapons development community, and of course, we've never produced a firearm. We've never taken a design from concept to full production and done that. Of course, that's why we got involved with the partnership with Bushmaster, is because they have the capabilities to do that. So, you know, that's Magpul's bad. Well, like I said, we were naive with the decision to release information with that. I think there's a lot of negative energy that goes towards Bushmaster for the pricing. Ultimately, that should be, you know, thrown back on us, and I apologize. We apologize for, you know, throwing out those figures. We were hopeful that that's where we would be, but ultimately, that's not where we ended up. And there's a lot of reasons for that, which I'm sure Ryan's going to go into more here. But ultimately, you know, we that's where we wanted to be, but we didn't quite make it. And there are some other things that got thrown in there that changed things. Specifically, one was the next carbine for the Army. You know, once we got involved with the partnership with Bushmaster and Remington, we realized that we definitely realized, and I'm sure Bushmaster did, the potential of the platform and where the direction that we wanted to see it go. And the new carbine, the next carbine trials coming out, we wanted to make sure that we were building the very best rifle that we possibly could. And there were no corners that were cut. We're not saying that we gold-plated this thing by any means. And Ryan's going to get into some more of that here. So, that's kind of our stance. That's where we're at. Magpul 100% supports Bushmaster, where they are with that pricing. I've seen the numbers. We've seen the numbers. It's very reasonable. And we believe that, you know, it's going to continue to be a success, regardless of the price. And, it's not anything that's unreasonable.
Before you get into your answer. Oh yeah, absolutely. Before you get into your answer, Ryan, let me just say, ARFCOM, there you heard it. You heard it straight from Drake's mouth. You know, when they first came out with the design, you heard what his answer was, how things have changed, and what obstacles they came into that they did not realize when they first announced it. So I think we can get over complaining about the price now, guys. I think we don't need any more posts or any more threads complaining about the price. He answered the question point blank right there, and I commend you, Drake, for answering that question. I knew it was going to be one of the big issues. Everyone keeps IMing me. Are you going to ask them about the price? Are you going to ask them about the price? There it is, ARFCOM. We've got an answer. We've got a concrete answer. Now back to you, Ryan. Tell us some of the
things. Yeah, well, you asked about some of the features, and just kind of, and I don't want to just regurgitate stuff we've been putting out there for the last couple months. But if I just take the short list, you know, the multi-caliber nature of the platform, it's quick and it's very easy. In fact, the first time I did it, it took me, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm down to 2 minutes myself. There's guys that are faster than me at it, but let's call it 3 minutes. In 3 minutes, I could swap from 5.56 to 6.8, and it fires reliably in both. And the first time I did it, I was surprised. So it's not just that it converts calibers, but it's how easily it converts calibers. That really is an advantage. It's a short stroke, regulated gas piston. Again, there's gas pistons out there. I think it's going to take a little while for everything to settle out and everyone to learn that not every gas piston is created the same. But we probably need a couple years on all these systems out in the market to find out how people are stacking up. And right. We put a lot of development work into ours, so we definitely are confident about it. The fact that it's fully ambidextrous. And I think ambidextrous used to be the big word. Now the big word is fully, because we have the fire selector – magazine release, bull catch and release are mirrored on both sides of the lower receiver, and then our charging handle is swappable, and we can do a double-sided charging handle in the near future that will put that handle on both sides.
And as a southpaw, I have to thank you for that.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about what ambidextrous means in terms of usage, but so the fact that the charging handle is non-reciprocating, that's a huge advantage. And not only does it not move during the cycle of operation, but you can use it as a forward assist if and when you need to. I mean, I haven't run into that situation, but it does have that functionality built in. And then next is the life cycle. And this is where I'm supposed to tell you that it can shoot for X thousands of rounds. But the truth of it is that we haven't found the limit of the platform yet. There's a long answer to why that is. It really has to do with the fact that every time we build up another round of prototypes, you know, you shoot it for 12,000 rounds and something breaks. So you take that, you redesign it, you redevelop it, get new samples, and you start over again. And then you get to 14,000 rounds and something else breaks, which is great. And you take that, redesign it, redevelop it, resample it, and then you go through testing again. And so we're continually moving up to what that threshold is, but every time we find it, it takes us back to the beginning. So one of the little-known things, the production ACR is a Gen 6 ACR.
Oh, okay.
Been through that many different rounds of development.
So we're six generations into the ACR. We're not just dealing coming straight off a prototype here.
Exactly. Six generations. You know, we may talk about it later, maybe not, but the Remington ACR, that's a Gen 7, and that's still in development, and it's heading towards what it's going to be. And so there's, you know, a lot's gone into it. And but that life cycle and kind of hitting that outer limit, one of the important things to say is that the majority of testing that's taken place has actually been on the full auto, and much of that full auto testing has been suppressed. Well, that's really the hardest way you can ever run this firearm.
Right.
So if you're in a non-suppressed semi-auto cycle of operation, it's going to do even better.
Right.
And what plays a huge role into it is obviously good design, good quality materials, but melanite is a huge part of the equation. And melanite is what all the entire barrel assembly, all the action parts are coated with. And, you know, I don't know if here's the time to talk a little bit about what melanite is and how it works. But,
yeah, let's do it.
But as we've, you know, as we've canvassed the marketplace, and for those of you who are familiar with what makes Bushmaster stand apart from its competitors and over the years what's made it, what made our barrel production and barrel performance enhanced is chrome lining. Chrome lining
right.
does a lot of great things, and we're not going to get into that now, but what we found after going out and looking at what's the next thing, melanite is what we got to. So melanite is a matte surface conversion that specifically tries to combat friction, enhance the corrosion resistance, and kind of mitigate that heat buildup. It's much, much harder than steel, much harder than the 4150 that we cold hammer forge to get to the barrel. And you can also hold a much tighter tolerance because chrome, if you know about the chrome process, really you kind of, when you button broach like a standard Bushmaster barrel, what you're doing with chrome is you're adding material back in. So you kind of like over buttoned it, and then you're going to add back in the chrome to get to your final dimension. Now, we've kind of perfected that because we've been doing it for a long, long time, and we keep a really good tight tolerance, but we can keep even tighter with melanite. And we don't add surface dimension to it. All we do is we convert the surface. So that's a good advantage. And the corrosion resistance that we're able to achieve is vastly superior to chrome or nickel plating and makes it almost impervious to corrosion in rain, but even in salt water, which is that's a pretty tough environment to perform in. And
yeah.
The other thing we've seen is an exceptional maintaining of accuracy, especially over, you know, a tremendous amount of rounds, kind of improved to an order of magnitude above even chrome-lined barrels, certainly over unlined barrels. So we're very, very happy with the performance we're getting out of melanite.
That's great. Thank you for letting us know. That was another hot topic question. What's the coating? What's this mystery?
Pixie dust.
Yeah, what's
Pixie
this
dust,
mystery
right?
juice?
What's
this mystery juice these guys are putting on here? Now we know. Another ARFCOM exclusive, you guys. You heard it here first. You can't get this information anywhere else. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say the very last thing, and this is the kind of thing that you can't really describe on a radio show or in a magazine article or on a blog, and that is what it's like to shoot it. And that's probably that was my biggest heartache at SHOT Show, for instance. You get all these people dropping by the booth, and they're like, you know, what's it like? Tell me about it. I'm like, well, I can tell you, but until you shoot it, until you experience it, you can't really get it. And it's, you know, when we talk about things like, okay, for instance, when you talk about accuracy, when you talk about reliability, in my world, in this world of firearms, that's just like, that's how you get in the game. That's not even how you win. Everyone has to have that. All of our competitors have to have that. We have to have that. And so I kind of want to skip past it. Not that it's not important, but that's kind of like the price of entry. But okay, when we talk about the design, and Magpul was more important in this way than even we were, because they were the one who synthesized all these features and the design together. But when we talk about it being ambidextrous, we don't just mean that so left-handers can go shoot it and enjoy it. What we really mean with ambidextrous is for the soldier, for the officer, if they were to receive a strong side injury, they can transition to their weak side and still adequately manipulate the firearm, which in that situation is incredibly important. And when we talk about firing suppressed, we don't mean a can mounted, you know, in your backyard kind of plinking away. Like, we're talking about super high rate of fire while you're moving and while you're fighting. When we talk about corrosion resistance, we're talking about extended saltwater operations and the ability for the firearm to perform without any lubrication at all. That's one of the other hallmarks of Melanite. So we actually recommend that people don't lube their firearm, the ACR in particular. Lube your other firearms. But because it can already move and not foul, lubrication, all it does is give an opportunity to gunk it up. So we always, on the ACR, we say keep it dry because that's how it's going to work the best. So, you know, that's why I want, and I'm anxious for people to start shooting it and start telling each other about it. You know, it's one thing to hear it from me, but don't take it from me. You know, OMD put out a great review on AR15.com. Absolutely love it. And I've loved all the conversation that it's generated. But, you know, when you start shooting it, that's when you really get a sense of what this thing is. And if you start training with it, you're going to see that even more. But when you fight with it, and not a lot of people are going to get to or have to, but when you fight with it, that's where it does its best work. That's what I think.
Right. And that's really,
you know,
cool.
I'll throw out there.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was also going to throw out there, too, that, you know, early on from the involvement with Bushmaster and Magpul, the collaboration together, it was a high priority for Bushmaster to understand where we, Magpul, were coming from and understanding what the marketplace wanted. And we know that the marketplace not only wants a highly durable weapon, but they don't want a dumbed-down version. And Bushmaster has adhered to that and embraced that. And this is not a dumbed-down version. That Gen 7 that Ryan was mentioning earlier, that's the Remington version, I mean, there's going to be differences, but for the most part, you're going to be getting the same weapon that we're pushing forward to with the military sales side. And Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's right in line with what we're talking.
Yeah, just quickly, the only difference between a Gen 7 and a Gen 6 right now is the military version that's in development is the work that's being done is to optimize the full auto fire control group. It's to optimize the gas regulation under full auto, and there's an alternate handguard. Otherwise, it's all the same internal components and all the same parts.
Very interesting. Good stuff, guys. For our listeners, we're going to take some calls. Now, these guys have ponied up some serious, serious prizes for this show. I mean, they have when I first talked to Ryan and I was telling him kind of what we wanted to do, you know, I was thinking, okay, you know, we'll get maybe a cool Bushmaster upper or something. But he actually ponied up a complete Bushmaster rifle. A complete Bushmaster rifle that we're going to give away here in a contest, and I'm going to tell you right now how we're going to do this contest. I am going to post a topic in both the Bushmaster industry forum and the Magpul industry forum. If you want to be entered, you have to post this phrase, Magpul and Bushmaster, a match made in heaven. You post that phrase in each of the threads, the one in the Bushmaster forum and the one in the Magpul forum. If you don't post in both threads, your entry is not going to be counted. So go right now. I'm posting up the threads right now in both the Bushmaster industry forum and the Magpul industry forum. The phrase you need to put in is Magpul and Bushmaster, a match made in heaven. Then you'll be entered. We're going to take entries all the way up, until Friday morning at 1 a.m. Pacific, and then I'll do the drawing Friday evening. Magpul has donated just a whole bunch of cool Magpul stuff, and we're going to package that up for people. We've got a Bushmaster soft carbine case, of course the Bushmaster 1 MOE complete carbine in your choice of color. I just can't thank you enough, Ryan and Drake, for ponying up for AR15.com after some of the stuff that's been said about you guys over the last week. You guys really, really showed your gentlemanliness with this.
My pleasure. I'm not going to lie. I'm totally dorking out here and chasing the form right now, and you already got a winner here. That's crazy. You guys are fast.
Yeah. What we do is we'll let everybody post here. We'll let them post for the next few days. I'll make sure that only the people that have posted in each form, the Magpul and the Bushmaster form, are entered in the contest, and then we'll assign everybody a number, and then we go to random.org. It's a random number generator on the internet, and we just start pulling the numbers up and start giving away the prizes. So, yeah, you guys, I want all our listeners to know these guys ponied up for AR15.com. They really stepped up to the plate and hit a home run for us here, despite some of the mean things that have been said. And I think some of those mean things are going to die off with some of the answers we've got today. Also, we've got some Bushmaster hats that we're going to give away to callers. All right, we've got now maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes left if you want to call up and ask a question. I still got a couple of questions left. If we don't get all the hats given away to callers, we're going to go ahead and give them away in the drawing. One more question I had that I have to get to before we get any further. What's up with the 1-in-7 barrels? When will they be out, the 1-in-7 twists?
Right now we're actually targeting June for our spare barrel program, and really the demand's actually been a little higher than we anticipated out of the blocks, so all of our barrels have been getting gobbled up, and we just got to make more. So I think, you know, our standard barrel twist is 1-in-9. If you look across the industry, it's 1-in-9. I know 1-in-7 is the military twist, and there's a lot of people talk about why the big army adopted that, and I think it really boils down to that was a decision that was made to help stabilize the tracer round. And I don't know how many of the guys out there are shooting tracer rounds, but really, if you look at, and don't take it from me, but if you look at the magazine articles that are coming out, some of the independent reviews that are out on the web right now, our 1-in-9 barrel is actually achieving great stabilization with up to 77 grain weight bullets. And I feel good about that. I feel really good about that. But we will have the 1-in-7 available in the spare barrel program. And then in terms of a complete rifle that features a 1-in-7 barrel, we can do that. We will do that. But it kind of comes down to what customers want to buy. I mean, the distributors and the dealers kind of tell us what they want us to deliver them. And so the best thing to do is go to the dealer and say, this is what I want. I want a 1-in-7 twist. And that filters back to us. But one of the little-known facts is you can always call into Bushmaster and special order a rifle built up with that twist barrel, and then we'll get it all worked out with your dealer and get it delivered. So you can always go that route, too.
There it is, guys. We've got a couple of callers. Why don't we see what these guys have to say? Jesse James, he's online. B1, you're on Radio Free ArfCom with Ryan and Drake.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, is this Jesse, the first commercial owner of the ACR?
Yeah, that's me, man. I got it at the silencer shoot. Wanted to thank Joe Harris for that because he was actually the guy that won the bet, but he was a real gentleman, and he gave me the opportunity to own the first one, so I wanted to say thank you to him first. Had a couple questions for you guys. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I purchased 5 more, actually, when I got through and got rid of them, got them for my friends and whatnot, and I think it's an excellent product. I wanted to know what the major differences were between the one that the number one gun that I got and the Gen 6s that are out now.
That is a very good question. Probably not much. I know we did a gas block revision. And did yours have the bayonet lug on it?
Yes, it did.
Okay, so the commercial version no longer has the bayonet lug. Again, not a lot of people charging around the neighborhoods with those either.
Exactly.
So the gas block revision and then the gas regulator, we kind of put an extended tab on there with a hole with the right diameter to let you use a bullet tip to turn it, which, I mean, you can manipulate it with your fingers fine. It's just when it gets hot, you don't want to have to. You can use a push pin or a bullet tip in order to turn it around from suppressed to unsuppressed. But otherwise, most of the internals are
fingers going there, so... I had a couple other major questions that I just quelled some of the rumors here, and I know that a bunch of people have been asking me, especially at the shows and that shot, is the HCR, or whatever you want to call it, the Remington gun, is that currently in the market to replace the M16, or is it, what's the rumors with all that?
Obviously, the Department of Defense would have to recompete that platform, and they haven't done that yet. No secret that the contract with Colt for the M16 and the M4 has expired, although they continue
right.
to source it for right now. But
well, I just see companies
honest,
like Remington,
no
Bushmaster, AAC, and everything getting together, and I just was wondering if there was a reason why all you guys got together on it and if there was plans in the future to do something like that.
Well, I think that's kind of I would want the Remington defense guys to take a crack at that. Personally, I don't have any knowledge about a new timeline for when the compete might be. I do know that Remington is very serious about positioning itself to be ready for a competition such as that, and I think it's made some smart moves to put itself in position to do that and do that strongly. But I really can't give you any more information than that.
Yeah, and the other major question I had was everybody's wondering what the timeline is on the accessories and the release of the TAM guns and what's holding it up, if what's going on there.
All right, I'll take the last one first. TAM guns go into production next week, and so for the beginning of May, we'll be shipping a certain group of, 30118 or Coyote Brown, whatever you want to call them, basics and enhanced in May. In terms of, what was the first part of the question? I totally spaced.
The other one was the timeline on the accessories. And the
accessories.
The basic version before the enhanced.
Right. It kind of comes back to demand again. All of the accessories that we planned on selling on the side are all getting gobbled up by production, and so we just need to get ahead of it a little bit because demand's been a little higher than we anticipated. But we plan on doing that this summer. And Magpul will be having an accessories program as well. But because they're supplying us, it's all disappearing because we're taking it. So, Drake, did you have any more information there?
I get warm, tingly feelings every time I go back in production and see all the ACR parts there, and I know they're going to Bushmaster. So that said, this is a fairly new production line for us. We're taking care of initial demand right now with Bushmaster. And that said, we're anticipating by summertime we should be meeting Bushmaster's demand for the accessories that are necessary to push guns out the door, and we'll be having additional colors, additional stocks later on this summer.
You still there, Jesse?
I figured I'd give somebody else a chance to ask some questions here. I just want to thank you guys for everything, and thank you for the opportunity on owning the rifles, and I think you guys did a great job, and the price point is arguable, but I think it is a better rifle for the money. So,
Jesse.
Good job on it, guys.
Jesse.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? Before you go, IM me your personal information. We'll get you out one of these Bushmaster hats, okay?
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot, John. You're doing a great job.
Okay. Thank you. Next up, let's go through some of these callers. Since we got three people online at least. Ross from North Carolina, he's on B2. You're on with Drake and Ryan.
Hey, Drake and Ryan. I just wanted to call up and thank you guys for bringing this to the market. I got the opportunity to play with the original Masada prototype out at a couple of SHOT Shows, and really like the design, and I've had a chance to get hands on the ACR. Personally, I'm holding out for the enhanced configuration in TAN. I'm currently running a SCAR, and it might just get put in the safe and forgotten about once I get my hands on these. But I was very impressed with the fit, finish, and quality. Personally, I believe it exceeds the FN I'm currently running. And I just wanted to thank you guys for bringing it to the market and making it a possibility.
What's up with the enhanced ones? When are they going to be out again?
Those are going to be out in May as well, both colors.
Okay.
And I appreciate you saying that. I mean, as everyone knows, we took a lot of time to get here, and we felt like it was the time that we needed to take. And I'm hoping that everyone, once they get to feel it and handle it and shoot it, that the fit and finish of it really kind of meets their expectations.
Yeah, on that... That note, Ryan, I mean, it's the first gun I've ever picked up where you've actually, got a chance to shake the thing and nothing rattles, which was kind of amazing that someone managed to get the tolerances that tight. especially with two different companies, one producing the polymer components with Drake and the guys at Magpul, and Bushmaster producing the metal components. But you guys really did a fine job on that, so I just wanted to call in and say thank you.
Ross, thanks for the call. Welcome. Ross, send me an IM, and we'll send you out one of these Bushmaster hats, okay?
All right, thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
And make sure you post in both the Magpul and the Bushmaster Industry Forum threads for the contest, for the drawing, all kinds of good stuff, including a complete Bushmaster rifle. All right, next up, Steve from Pittsburgh on line B3. You there, Steve? Okay, there he is.
I was just asking a question. I got to play with one at the gun shop I work at here, and the serial number isn't on the lower, it's on the upper receiver. Just wondering about that. Yeah,
sure. I can dive into that briefly. You know, when we were designing the weapon, we were looking at the AR-15 and what we all know to be as the lower receiver being the serialized part. For most of you, you already know that the AR-15 is fairly uncommon to have the lower receiver as a serialized part. We wanted to be able to expand the platform and keeping with the modularity theme that we've got, serializing the upper part that houses, you know, the barrel, the trunnion, the carrier group, all the necessity parts to, you know, really the meat of the weapon, keep the serial number on there so we can do our caliber changes, swap out lower receivers, and make it a little easier, no other paperwork and whatnot. Makes it a little cheaper to do the caliber conversion.
Yeah, that's great.
And Ryan, if you want to expand
any idea about an AK lower?
Ryan?
Well, I think this is the opportunity to set new expectations that we could be judged against, is it not?
Yeah, that would be.
You know, we so the first caliber that we're going to move into this summer is 6.8 special purpose cartridge, and then we have a number of things on the drawing board when it comes to calibers for next year. But it's a longer path.
Yeah, always something to look forward to.
Yeah, and it's a longer path, and it's something that Magpul and Bushmaster Remington are all going to work on together, because you know, obviously we're all involved in the component creation and the fit of it all. So I would say just stay tuned, but we've got plans.
So it's safe to say that we will see an ACR AK caliber conversion eventually.
Yeah, great.
Yes.
You're going to see 6.8.
I'd say that's safe to say, and I would say that we're not going to throw out any timelines out there by any means, but that was part of the original concept. You know, the 7.62 by 3.9, it's a fairly popular cartridge. You know, AKs have been very successful. I want one, and I know a lot of the guys here, that's something we're anxious for, so it's just a matter of time. Just like Ryan had mentioned earlier, we took the time that was necessary to get to where we are now, and it's going to maintain to be the theme across the board, even moving into the additional calibers.
Steve, if you're still there, send me an IM with your personal information, and I will ship you out one of these Bushmaster hats, okay?
Okay, thanks, man.
Thanks for calling in. One of the questions I wanted to ask, this is kind of a guilty pleasures question, just for me or anyone else. The ACR, it's featured prominently in the Modern Warfare 2 game by Infinity Ward, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Did the developers from Infinity Ward contact you guys during the development and ask you about the ACR, or could they put it in, or could they get a prototype to use to kind of to see how it shoots and how it feels, or do you guys know anything behind that, or did they just stick it in there on their own?
Well, you know, early on in the development of the Masada, there were, I would say after the first SHOT Show, a lot of people, a lot of guys in the movie industry, a lot of guys in the video game industry, and even outside the design and can do with firearms were interested in using the design, and whether it be a video game or a movie or a commercial. And for the most part, I know this might sound crazy, but we're fairly busy, and when I hear a gamer calling me up asking to put a video game in, gets me a little excited, but at the same time, I don't play a lot of video games. See the potential there, of course, to be able to put the rifle in front of a lot of folks. But at the time that Infinity Ward contacted us, it was, this is Bushmaster's baby. And, of course, we're still involved in this, and I deferred over to the Bushmaster side of the house, and they took it from there. But ultimately, it's cool. You know, we think it's great that the rifle that we designed and developed and now bought to production is in a video game, but it really, it's, I don't have Modern Warfare posters up in my room, and I'm not doing that. But and Ryan, I know Ryan had some involvement in that also.
Yeah, I mean, they contacted us. I think it was a referral from Drake over to us, and I don't think it was really given a whole lot of credence no offense to Infinity Ward, but we're like, yeah, yeah, okay, here's the model for the external dimensions. Go ahead and go for it. And I don't think anyone really thought it was going to turn into all that much. And it really kind of mushroomed into something that was way beyond what we could comprehend. I'm originally from the Pacific Northwest. I live in North Carolina now. And I brought one back over Christmas break just to show my family what I do for a living. And took my nephews out to the range and whatnot. And that night, my youngest nephew headed over to a buddy's house, and he was playing Modern Warfare 2. And he's like, so what are you shooting? And he's like, oh, it's the ACR. And he's like, oh, yeah, I shot that this morning. He goes, oh, you got the video game? He's like, no, my uncle brought it. I was shooting it at the range. And ever since then, he's like a rock star at school. Like, all the kids just like, hey, show me that picture again. Crazy.
That's great, though. It's great marketing for that younger generation, that you guys are going to have a solid customer base when they get old enough to buy rifles.
Yeah.
I have a question here from VLODPG. I don't know how to say his name. He sent me an IM about ACR for banned states. Are there any plans for ACRs with permanent muzzle brakes?
Yes, we do have plans for a permanent muzzle brake with a lower capacity magazine. Obviously, we would utilize the fixed stock, and we're just waiting to get to a place where we're caught up on production enough to be able to put that out as well. We're also in the beginning stages of a solution for California as well. So we definitely want to go nationwide, and we're going to take those steps. And I know people have been very patient with us, so I hate to ask it, but we need a little bit more patience on getting into those states where there's a few more restrictions.
Okay. Another question I got, this is from G-Lock. He said, will it get any lighter? Are there any plans to reduce some of the weight on it?
Well, you know, I don't really know how to answer that. I talked a little bit at SHOT Show, and it ended up on the Internet, about how that was part of the continuing improvement program, as it would be with anything. And that got kind of construed as, it's still in development. It's not done. No, it's done. And we are where we are. It's just we don't ever rest. And so is it one of a number of things we'll go back and look at? Yeah, it is. At the same time, you know, there really isn't the possibility without using, you know, space, you know, super space age materials to get it too much lighter, because you have to remember that it's a gas piston, which uses a lot more material. It uses an AR-180 bolt, which is pretty substantial, and there's a lot of weight there. And I wouldn't typify the composite polymer that Magpul puts in its components as plastic by any means. I mean, it's a good, solid, dense,
right, durable
material, and so there's some weight there. And there's some advantages, actually, with that in terms of its controllability. But being an infantryman myself, you don't want to hump a 8.2-pound carbine for 15 miles either. So I think that when you see it on paper, it looks heavy. When you hold it, when you shoot it, it's a different thing, and I'll let everyone make up their minds about that. But it, moving down the line, and as part of the Gen 7 project, there are some eyes and some minds looking at weight and just trying to get creative.
Okay. I got time, I think, for one more caller. Jerry from Pennsylvania, he's on line B1. Go ahead and make it quick, Jerry.
Yes, sir, real quick. I was just wondering, it might be a little premature here, but do you have any more information on the 6.8 conversion as far as maybe what you might be available in a barrel twist when that comes out? And also, I don't think Magpul, I think before, from what I've heard, they ruled out making a 6.8 mag, but has that changed at all with the ACR going to have a 6.8? conversion?
Yeah, I'll tackle the twist rate. The twist rate's a 1 in 10, which is the same as the other 6.8 that we have in the Bushmaster line. And the caliber conversion kit is a barrel assembly, a bolt, and a magazine when they're available this summer. So that's what I can tell you about that.
Okay.
Drake, do you want to talk about 6.8 magazine?
Sure, definitely. We're always looking at ways of improving products that exist on the market, and you know, looking at what we can do to make things better down the road. I can't give you any specific information on whether or not it's something we're moving forward with or not at this time, but you know, we're always looking at ways to improve existing designs that are out there for sure.
Hey, you guys, Ryan, Drake, I really want to thank you guys taking some time. We went a little bit longer than I said we would, and I'll wrap it up now. But thanks a lot for coming on, clearing up a whole lot of issues with the ACR. Thanks for the prizes you put out there for the AR15.com members. And I want to also thank you guys for the feedback you give us on the site. You know, there's some people that they don't get all the answers they want when they want it, but you guys do a really good job of keeping the AR15.com community up to date with when they have questions for you guys. And just thanks for all the support you've given us.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. And thanks for all the listeners being out there. And, you know, the listeners and the guys that are out there posting, there's one thing that they are for sure, and that's passionate. And I can definitely appreciate that, and I appreciate that they keep us honest. And we just continue to work together, and we'll get there.
Hey,
and I'll piggyback on Ryan. I'll piggyback last thing on what Ryan said is just as passionate as the forum guys are. I mean, understand that the guys that are out here that are swinging the hammers and designing and developing new product and manufacturing the product, we're just as passionate, and we really are. We don't have all the answers all the time, and while it may seem confusing exactly why we're doing what we're doing, there's definitely reasons behind it, and just bear with us and trust that we're doing the best that we can.
Without a doubt, your passion shows up in the quality of your products. You guys, both companies make good quality stuff. Ryan Smith from Remington Bushmaster, Drake Clark from Magpul. Thanks again for being on the show, guys. Next week, everyone, we have our Save the Seals show. It's going to be a big fundraising show for the three seals being prosecuted for assault. Remember, if you want to get in this contest to win the Bushmaster rifle and a whole bunch of cool prizes from Bushmaster and Magpul, you must post in both the Magpul industry forum thread, contest thread, and the Bushmaster thread. The phrase you need to post is Magpul and Bushmaster, a match made in heaven, which truly that's what the ACR is. Thanks for listening, everybody, and God bless America.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.